Hello and welcome to another episode of the Clippers Beat Podcast. It's your host, Nikki K. And this episode, for the first time ever, I get to host Fred Katz. He covers the Wizards for The Athletic. I've been on Fred's podcast before, but this is the first time he's returning the favor. Fred, how's it going over there in DC?
This is major. How many favors would I owe you if each time you came on my podcast was a favor?
Oh, I've got a favor tally, and I'll let you know at the appropriate time how many favors you owe me.
I would owe you a lot of green beans.
Yes, all the green beans. For those of you who don't know, which is probably everyone who's listening, Fred grew up a tormented Clippers fan. And since covering the NBA, he'll say that he doesn't root for the Clippers anymore. But I do believe that there's a fan in all of us still at some point. And Fred, I gotta believe that you liked what you saw in terms of what the Clippers put together this season.
Do you have to believe that?
I have to believe it.
I liked it for the Clippers fans. No, you really do lose your interest. Like, you lose your fandom and your rooting interest when you cover the league, and you just what is it that Zach Lowe says? He says, I'm Team Zach. That's the team that I root for. I root for the thing.
So should I tell Zach that are you Team Zach, Fred?
Yeah, I'm Team Zach. No, I'm Team Fred. I root for the things that make my life convenient. So if something happens to make, you know, my life convenient, where like I'm planning on releasing a story in which about a guy who's playing well, like, yeah, you know what? I'll admit, it would be nice to see that guy play well that night, so my story doesn't have to be scrapped and I have to write a totally new thing or hold it off and get stressed by that or whatever. Those are the things that I root for now, these extremely self-serving things that make me the arrogant journalist that I am.
On that note, unicorns are not real. Fans don't exist, and there is no magic in the world.
Exactly. I did grow up a tortured Clippers fan. Yeah, I mean, they're doing a great job. It really shows the difference that, like, it's probably the starkest example of the difference that good ownership can show in the history of the sport, because you lose the worst owner in the history of the league in 2014. And then you get Ballmer, who is just like the take my money guy. Like, he's the human embodiment of the take my money meme on the internet. And it's just like, it makes all the difference in the world when you have Michael Winger potentially get an interview with Minnesota, but they somehow convince him to no, stay there. And Trent Redden, potentially meet with New Orleans, and Trent Redden's great, so come there. And all of a sudden, you're paying an absurd amount of money for your front office. Well, absurd for anybody else, but who cares if Ballmer wants to pay it? Then great for the Clippers, and you've got these unbelievably intelligent and talented people in a great cultured organization that's set up really well from a player's perspective, obviously, for the future between their young guys and their cap situation. They're obviously in a great spot.
And you've seen quite the contrast run over there in the Wizards land, I'm guessing. And how are they putting together their GM search currently?
I'm not sure. It is a little directionless. I mean, they thought they were going to get Tim Connelly from Denver, and then when they didn't, I know they were very surprised by that, and it's kind of hit a halt since then. Over the last week and a half, they haven't, to my knowledge, brought in any new candidates or anything like that. They interviewed two guys who Troy Weaver and from Oklahoma City, and Danny Ferry, who was a GM in Cleveland and Atlanta and an interim in New Orleans. And they interviewed those guys over the 6.5 weeks they were waiting on Connelly. And I don't think they're absolutely over the moon for those guys. If they were, they would have hired one of them by now. At least brought one of them in and had something, you know, verbal in the meantime. I don't know what they're doing, to be honest. It's been more than 8 weeks they've been without a GM. So it's a little while. Drafts in 3 weeks.
Well, it's just a slight blip on the radar there. From your time in Oklahoma City, becoming familiar with the Thunder organization, and obviously Sam Presti, and you mentioned two names already that are kind of disciples are off the same tree, I guess, from Troy Weaver and also Michael Winger, what would be the one thing you say that really identifies these three successful men in this realm and what makes them good at what they do and how they operate in a front office function?
That's a good question. Because I think Troy and Winger are very different. I think Winger is a little bit more like Sam Presti than Troy is. Because Winger's a lawyer. He's kind of a cap savant. And Troy is more of like a scout.
Yeah.
A recruiter and a scout and a talent evaluator. He's a really, really great and really well-respected talent evaluator. You know, he's the guy who was pushing the Thunder to draft Russell Westbrook 4, which now sounds like, well, why wouldn't you take Russell Westbrook 4th? At the time, Thunder got killed for that pick because everyone thought it was such an unbelievable reach. You know, he's the guy who's identified a lot of other talent for them and who's kind of like almost like a liaison between the players and the front office because he's known for really, really good relationships with players. He's just kind of that like easygoing sort of kind of free-flowing sort of dude. And Winger is, I think, more of the Presti type, a little more buttoned up. He's a lawyer. He's a cap expert. He's kind of like this savvy guy at the top moving the pieces. And that's certainly what Presti is. I would say what you get if you're in the Thunder organization is this supreme sense of actual, like, literal organization. I don't mean, like, organizational culture. I mean, like, being organized. They are just so obsessively organized. It's part of their culture. And I imagine for their employees, it like probably gets frustrating at times because it's like, do I really need to do this way right now? But it leads to this general consistency throughout the organization where they kind of have their own language. They have their own systems, their own way of organizing things. And, you know, the Thunder know they're a remarkably diligent organization. I think that kind of stuff rubs off on the people who were there. You know, they've got Rob Hennigan has left there to become a general manager with Orlando and then gone back. Scott Perry with the Knicks, general manager with Sam Presti's assistant GM back in the day. So I think they've got a little bit of a tree coming out of there, and obviously Winger too. And I think a lot of those people are all kind of known as these very diligent types. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Well, and I think ultimately what it all points to and what we're seeing now in stark contrast with the dysfunction of organizations like the Lakers is the lack of communication or the lack of flow of information or the systematic organization, literal organization, as you mentioned. If that's not there, there is going to be big time issues. So maybe what you take away from the Spursian way, the Thunder culture, is that communication and that obsessive flow of information really pays off in the end.
Yeah. I mean, look, everything the Thunder do is based on what the Spurs do.
Yeah.
Like they just pressed the can from the Spurs. He wants to copy the Spurs. There are people there who came from the Spurs. And Presti wants to bring people through the organization in a very Spurs way and have a very Spurs culture. And a lot of things that they do will make sense if you just think, oh, right, that's how the Spurs do it. That's why they're doing this. Like, if you wonder why are the Thunder doing things, just ask, do the Spurs do it the same way? And the answer is usually yes.
And here we are on a Clippers podcast with you covering the Wizards talking about the Thunder.
Hey, we have the Michael Winger connection.
Yeah, the Michael Winger connection. Okay, now shifting focus to arguably the biggest star of the NBA playoffs, Kawhi Leonard, obviously a huge target for the Clippers. What have you taken away from his season in Toronto and his postseason performance and what that may indicate for a hopeful Clippers fan that he could be wearing red and blue next season?
I mean, it's totally possible. I'm not in the game of guessing on Kawhi.
Yeah.
Because he's just so quiet. Like, there are some players who you can figure out where they're going to sign because they just will tell everybody.
Yeah.
They'll tell their their friends in the league, their friends out of the league. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying it makes it easier to guess where they're going to go if they're telling people where they're going to go.
Yeah.
And there are some players where it just, it makes it easy. Kawhi, by no one who's ever heard of him, surprise, is not like that. You know, he's not going around telling everybody what he wants to do. Now, word around the league is that he's going to the Clippers. I mean, that's what people around the league think. But I'm always wary of, like, this is what the league thinks. Because I don't know where they're getting that from.
Yeah.
You know, or they could be getting it from Kawhi's relatives. They could be getting it from the famous or the infamous Uncle Dennis. The NBA is just like, it's a big game of telephone. Yeah. And so it's just like, I got to be able to figure out where this person is getting it from in order for it to be a thing. Like, I think wherever he goes, he's going to want to bring somebody with him. And obviously the Clippers have two max slots, so that all lines up. And him wanting to be in LA, that lines up too. And, you know, the entire league believing that the Clippers are the leading candidate. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Toronto if they win the title or something. But, like, honestly, if I'm Kawhi, and this is me projecting, I feel like it's easier to leave Toronto if they win than if they lose.
Yeah.
Like, if they win, then Kawhi can just be like, if I leave, everyone will still love me here forever. I came in. I brought them a title. I beat the unbelievable, unbeatable Warriors. And now I can go bounce and do my own thing. It's kind of like how LeBron finally won a title for Cleveland, and he left for the Lakers, and Cavs fans still love him, which is the complete opposite of what happened last time he left Cleveland. Like, if he wins a title, it's easier for him to leave, not harder. I feel like the hardest thing is getting all the way to the finals and losing, and then you're like, oh, we were so close. I really want to see what we could do next year, you know? And so I don't really know how much the finals affects him, if at all. For all I know, he's definitely going to the Clippers and the Raptors have no chance. But it's like hard for me to make an actual prediction because Kawhi is just like, you know, he's Kawhi. He's a quiet dude.
He's a fun guy.
He's a fun guy. Did you see the Kyle Lowry interaction with a reporter yesterday at Finals Media Day?
No. What did he do? What did he say?
It was so great. It was so unintentionally funny. It was not meant to be. I mean, Kyle Lowry can be very funny because he's just wildly sarcastic. And I think some people, because he's so feisty he'll make me laugh. And this wasn't one of them. It was someone asked him about like what his relationship is like with Kawhi. And he gave these like very, very, very like just like a cliche non-answer.
Yeah.
And the reporter followed up with fun guy. And Kyle Lowry goes, he's a fun guy.
Hey, that's good. That's good.
No, I was like, I don't know if the reporter did it so seamlessly and without any sort of like baiting tone or anything like that, that I'm like, I don't
know if they were aware.
I think it might've just been a coincidence with how that played out. But I also think it's plausible that both of them were in on the joke too, that the like reporter knew the fun guy thing and was like, fun guy. And then Kyle Lowry,
without skipping a beat.
Yeah, I just said he's a fun guy.
Well, yeah, because that's one of those ones where they either both knew exactly what they were doing or they were clueless.
And either of those scenarios makes it extremely funny.
Yes, yes. All right, so playing a little game here with a free agency pitch, right? We're hearing all these things coming out of Toronto, like restaurants are ordering Kawhi lifetime food. He's getting offers for penthouses, you name it. Toronto's rolling out the red carpet.
You know how much Toronto's rolling out the red carpet? He's getting like there's like the free food stuff. Restaurants putting up signs in their window, which say that Kawhi gets to eat for free if he re-signs.
Yes.
I tweeted like, yes, Toronto. I'm sure Kawhi is coming back just so he can eat for free at Pita Pit. And then Pita Pit quote tweeted me telling Kawhi that if he re-signed, then he could eat for free at Pita Pit.
You just literally got Kawhi a lifetime supply of Pita Pit.
I got him a lifetime supply of Pita Pit. And so I want I want residuals from Kawhi on that. He's got to take me there one time for just like a solid pita.
Or you should be like, every June I get unlimited hummus, free hummus. That should be your stipend there. Now, okay, so my thing to you, Fred Katz, you're a free agent. You know, you've got like ESPN.com, Sports Illustrated courting you, The Athletic trying to keep you, like all the heavy hitters are coming swinging. What's the one thing? Whoops, just dropped my phone. If you're in a room with, you know, three top executives, and now we're bridging gaps here. I'm gonna say Doc Rivers is like, hey Fred, you're gonna get a lifetime supply of X if you come here, and then you know you've got Cy Majeure saying to you, hey Fred, we'll make sure your logo is completely ours, because also Mark Stein was some great reporting on that. We'll touch on that in a bit. I want to know what's your make or break? I'm getting promised this. I'm going there as a free agent.
Oh wow, that's a great question. What's yours?
Unlimited supply. Let's see. Things I love. Well, you know, I think I immediately think of coffee. Like, you know, you walk into Starbucks and you never.
Yeah, but that's a bad pick, because how much do you spend on coffee every day? You got to think of beyond just what you like and what it's worth.
Yeah, I know. And that's where I'm not good with money in general, because I'm just like, oh, what's the most convenient? I guess like.
I know.
What is it?
I mean, depending on the city, I would probably pick like a phenomenal food item or restaurant and just want to be able to be there all the time. But of course, my love for food is one of the principal reasons why I am so in so much worse shape than every other player in the NBA. I shouldn't say every other, just every.
Okay, but what's like a chain and an item that you could told you could have unlimited of?
I mean, if we're saying, I'll localize it to LA. Okay. So like if you told me I could just eat a Katsuya for free whenever I want.
Okay.
I'd be in.
So we'll see you in a Clippers uniform next season.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Or like you told me that I could go to there's like this great
the pokey place. You like the pokey place too.
Yeah, but like that's just like Sweetfin. That's like that's not counting. Like come on.
And also
I'm going high end. Like I'm gonna go to like where is Kifune? Santa Monica?
Yeah, I think.
That place has great fish.
Okay.
Something like that. That's what I'd want.
All right. So we now know how to pitch you next time your contract is up. Okay.
This is how much I turn my when I'm like on the road for 2 days. This is how much I turn my road trips into just excursions for me to be able to go eating, because I can just reel off sushi places in cities I've never lived.
You have always looked forward to your road trips depending on the cities you're going to and the food that is there. So give me your 100%. What are your top five NBA travel cities based on the food?
Okay, New Orleans is number one.
What's the go-to dish you order when you're there?
It really depends. So like I've done some really disgusting stuff.
Like what?
I told this story to our mutual friend, Andrew Schlecht, the other day.
Hi, Andrew. You should listen to this, Andrew.
Like last time we went to, when the Wizards played in New Orleans in November.
Yeah.
I'm used to covering, this is the first year I haven't covered the Western Conference, because I was covering OKC before.
Yeah.
And so I only get one trip to New Orleans.
Oh, so you go ham.
Oh, yeah. So I went down there, dropped my bags off, got in late morning, maybe early afternoon, around lunchtime, went to this place called Cake Cafe, which is this hole in the wall spot, has like my favorite sandwich ever. It's this crab meat, melted brie, spinach, sauteed spinach, like thick bacon sandwich on a buttered, toasted piece of challah bread.
Oh my God.
And it's absurd. And so I went there, I had that. As soon as I finished, immediately got in an Uber and went to St. James Cheese Factory. And had a caramelized onion Gruyere grilled cheese from there, which is so good, by the way. Then about probably 3 or 4 hours later, I went to dinner with Joel Myers, who is the voice of the Pelicans, and I've like known forever. And Joel like really peer pressures me into eating, like really peer pressures me into eating, like yells at me because he doesn't think I eat enough, and I eat a lot, and so because he's just a food pusher like no other, and just forces me into getting all of this food because he just loves the New Orleans food scene so much. And then I do it again. I always go to Mr. B's before the game there, get the barbecued shrimp. They have great crab cakes there too. And then after the game, I go to this really good oyster bar that's open until 2:30 in the morning, and
oh my gosh,
and rock out there. It's great. New Orleans is awesome. What else? Chicago's a great food city. LA is a good food city. Toronto is a really good food city. Obviously New York, but I'm from there, so we'll leave it out. Miami is great for Cuban food. Atlanta is kind of a sneaky decent food city. Like I went to a great Ethiopian place there. Yeah, there are like some sneaky good and like nicely cultured food options there.
So yeah,
probably forgetting a couple. Portland. Portland is an unbelievable food city.
Oh, I love yeah.
Portland's in the top five.
Do you do the donuts there?
I have, but I don't really know. Yeah. I've never had Voodoo Donuts. I've had Blue Star, but I kind of think Blue Star is overrated.
See, I've heard both, like, some people say that they think Voodoo is overrated and Blue Star is the way to go and vice versa. But yeah, it sounds like, well, are you savory over sweet or sweet over savory?
Oh, I'm just do both.
All the
I've never understood why people feel like they have to make a choice.
That's
just
true.
Continue consuming all of it.
Okay. Do you hear that the Clippers were looking to purchase the portion of rights to the Claw logo via Mark Stein?
If Mark Stein says it,
then
it's the real deal.
Speaking of free agents pitches, you know, get in a room with Steve Ballmer and he's like, hey, we've got your logo and we've got Katsuya. So you really have no other alternative.
The logo thing is kind of weird. Would that sway you at all?
To me, it's almost a little creepy in terms of like we own part of your likeness, right? Isn't that kind of what it is? Like,
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Like,
or at least we created part of your likeness.
Yeah, and I mean it's flattering, but it's also just like I mean, and I probably don't understand all the elements of it from a business perspective, like if a player would be like, oh hey, now we can put this on XXX even though I'm New Balance and you purchased it from Nike, so like I don't know if that would necessarily mean more to me in that sense. I don't have a logo, so can't really comment on that, but I do feel
we need to get you a logo.
Yeah, well, and I was like, I feel like if you were to have a sponsorship, it would be with New Balance. You're a very New Balance type of person.
I know you well enough to know that you meant that as an insult, and yeah. And I'm a little bit hurt.
But it's okay.
My dad wears New Balances.
And someday you will too.
Oh God, I do not wear Balances. I wear.
Okay.
There were other things.
Fred, what do you think about the Clippers' young guys? Shai, Sham. What do you think about the future of this roster?
So Shai, I voted for first team all rookie.
Yeah.
I think he's really impressive. I voted for him for first team all rookie, and then he actually played better than I thought. I mean, I'm really high on him. I think he's really, really good. And I think he's going to. He has this, like in the postseason, he just has this unbelievable composure. 19-year-olds, is he 19 or 20? Rookies who aren't old enough to drink don't make, ironically, often play like they're drunk. They don't make the right play.
Yeah.
The fact that he so often makes the right play, that he knows when he's supposed to kick on the drive and kick. Like rookies, When a big man is coming up to set a screen for a rookie in a pick and roll, the rookie runs the pick and roll too early, you know?
Yeah.
Shea has this incredible cadence to him where, like, he's got the timing down on when to go around, dribble around a screen. Like, he has this great vision of being able to find the right guys. And I don't even mean vision and just, like, driving and kicking for assists. I just mean, like, he has this great feel of when to swing, how to pass within an offense, which is, like, just not a thing that you see rookies have. He's clearly very smart. He's very composed. I really like his game. I think he's going to be really good. And I love Landry Shamet.
Yeah.
I don't think Shamet's going to be as good as him, but man, he reminds me of probably a slightly better ball handling JJ Redick.
Yeah. And he's just, I mean, the skill set he has right now is like what's hot in the NBA. You know, it's exactly what every team wants. And if he can shoot with this confidence early on in his career, I have to believe he's going to be an incredible asset moving forward.
And I'll tell you what. So I thought he was pretty terrible defensively this year,
yeah,
which is fine. Like, yeah, almost no rookies are positives defensively.
Yeah.
And if they are positives defensively, it's almost always because they're just like, they're Mitchell Robinson. Well, Mitchell, yeah, Robinson on the Knicks doesn't actually know what he's doing, but he's so tall and he's so long and he's such a physically gifted shot blocker that just offsets that he doesn't know what he's doing. So he's a net positive defensively.
Yeah.
Rookie guards are just like almost never good defenders. They're almost never slightly below average defenders. I mean, they usually suck. Even ones who get really good are bad defensively at the start and they work their way up towards getting good. And Shamet was really bad, I thought, defensively during the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
But he defended, I would be very, if I were a Clippers fan, I would be really encouraged about some of the defensive possessions and some of the defensive sequences he had during that series against the Warriors. Because he was pretty good. He was, like, very solid on a lot of those plays. It's like, man, if he becomes, and, like, he's an old rookie, but he's still, sometimes we get carried away, I think, being like, nah, he's old, 4-year player. He's old. No, he's not old. He's just an old rookie. He's still, yeah, like 3 or 4 years away from his prime.
Yeah.
Like, if he can become like a solid, just a solid defender, man, that's a good player because he's going to disrupt like hell. Like, he's only going to get better moving off the ball as long as he maintains his, like, I compared him to Redick. One of the reasons why Redick is as great as he is, and I guess this is a Clippers podcast, so people probably know this because they had 4 years of him, is just that his conditioning is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it's not just that he's smart and that he's fast and then he's agile running around these screens and he goes to the right spots and knows how to use screens and all that kind. He's quick, obviously. It's that in the fourth quarter, he's moving as fast as he was in the first quarter. And so, like, he's just going to cause all these troubles. Like, when he was on the Clippers, the way that Doc would use him is Redick would always score, like, 8 points, 10 points in the first quarter. And he'd cool off throughout the game. And when I say cool off, I don't mean he would start missing shots. What would happen was he would end up being the guy who would cause all this discombobulation for the defense. And Chris Paul would just pick him apart, right? Like, it was guys would make so many mistakes against that offense. That offense was wildly historically underrated, by the way. That offense was number one in the league 2 years in a row. The Chris Paul Clippers offense with Redick and DeAndre Jordan and Blake and that whole crew. But if Shamet has the conditioning and is this type of player, my God, he's going to be valuable because he's like, I mean, he's not a point guard or anything, but for a player who plays like that, it's not like he's a bad ball handler.
Yeah.
So like you can have a guy who can do that and then he can run like a pick and roll at the end of a possession. God, that was an unbelievable trade. Like, they got two picks and him.
And yeah. And I mean, the excitement of being able to have Shea and Sham develop and grow together as a backcourt duo, I just think it puts the Clippers in a really exciting position moving forward. And, you know, whether the front office looks at either of those guys as assets to be involved in a trade, depending on timelines, et cetera. That's one thing. But if you're just looking at quote unquote internal development, one of my favorite catchphrases, they've got a lot of exciting promise for this team.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, Montrez is under contract for another year. Lou Williams is on a great deal. Like, the thing is, like, they could bring in two max guys, and if they don't like the fit or something, or they get offered an incredible deal with Lou, like, they can do that, you know? Like, they're in a position to where, like, Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell are combining to make, what, $14 million next year?
Yeah.
Like, these guys are on such, like beyond reasonable contracts. That Lou Williams extension was just something else for the Clippers. I mean, that just worked out unbelievably for them. When he signed that 3-for-24 deal, I know a lot of people around the league were like, whoa, I cannot believe they got him so cheap. But it also kind of set the market for that kind of player. Like, you look around, you see some, you know, kind of similar types of instant offense bench guys end up getting in the $6-7 million range now. And it's because of that Lou Williams extension that he signed. And like, he, compared to the rest of the league, though, I mean, that's a very reasonable deal. If you feel like you want to flip that, or you want to flip Harold because of moves you make this summer, like, you can get a lot back in other skill sets for those guys. Those are awesome players.
I love everything you're saying, and I want to shine some light on you. You had some excellent early season predictions. Go ahead and toot your own horn and tell us what you accurately predicted before the start of the season.
Do you have this up? Do I have to call it up? I don't know it off the top of my head. I just copied and pasted it when I sent it to you.
You know off the top of your head.
Well, I know the Clippers were my team to surprise. I know
team
that.
To surprise. You also
here
had.
We go. I called it up in our text.
Okay.
No, you can toot my horn for me.
Oh, you had what? The Raptors making the finals.
Right. I had Golden State over Toronto. Uh-huh. I picked Siakam MIP. I picked Trae Young Rookie of the Year.
And he's pretty damn close.
He's close, but I'm not going to win that. My really bad one. I mean, we'll poke at me too. I had LeBron. LeBron was my MVP. This was in the Athletics preseason prediction thing, by the way.
Yeah. Okay.
Tibbs was my first coach to get fired.
Spot on.
Yeah, I think anyone could have predicted that one though.
So on that note, using your expertise in predicting way too early, where do you see the Clippers landing at the end of the regular season next year?
Oh, man. Oh, God. You know I'm going to be 100% wrong on this one, right?
I know. I love it. I just love having a recording of you being 100%.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Let's say they get Kawhi and they don't get KD. They bring in, like, really, they use the space to bring in, like, really, really good, reasonably played role players around those guys. They won 48 this year. Let's say they win 56 games.
Okay.
That's my guess. And they get the 2 seed in the West. No. 2 seed in the West. Yeah, sure.
I love it, Fred. You know what? I'm going to just make you my co-host on this podcast now. You've got all the excitement and optimism. Whether you say it's Team Fred or not, you know, I'm still rooting for Team 11-year-old Fred, who would be ecstatic about the thought of possibly the best postseason player in the NBA to join his favorite team.
I know. All I really had when I was growing up was like the 06 team. The 06 team was such a ridiculously fun team. The 05-06 Clippers. That was, came one game away from going to the conference finals. Daniel Ewing was used as a last second substitution in game 7 against Phoenix, and Elton Brand was so good in those playoffs. That was a really ridiculously fun team. Beat Denver in the first round. Sam Cassell was awesome that year. That was an unreal trade. They traded Marco Yard for Sam Cassell and a future first round pick, which was unprotected. from Minnesota, and that first round pick ended up being the main piece that went to New Orleans for Chris Paul.
And TBH, Sam Cassell is still paying off because he's very active on the coaching staff here. So
yes, and I also hear that Sam Cassell gets up more shots during practice than any other coach in the league.
Well, that's a fun little nugget.
Yes, it's a little fun fact about Sam Cassell for you.
I love it. Hey, Fred, we're officially Team 11-year-old Fred now. Where can listeners find your work and follow you?
Follow me on Twitter at Fred Katz, KATZ. Read my stuff on The Athletic DC in particular, because I cover the Wizards. You can listen to Wizards After Dark, which is my podcast, though I can't imagine that many Clippers fans sit around listening to a Wizard-centric podcast. But if you just really, really love the sound of my voice, which I imagine you don't, you can listen to that. And I think that's everything. That's all. If I have anything more, it's not important enough to remember.
Fredster, you absolutely rock. I look forward to seeing your prediction come to fruition. And thank you so much again for giving us your time. Everyone go follow Fred. He's got lots of entertaining content, whether it's Wizards related or just observations on the NBA as a whole. Always an excellent follow. Fred, thank you so much. And for everyone listening, you can always find this podcast at wherever you get your pods at or at clnsmedia.com.